Ricatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ricatra AI. Welcome, curious listener, to the deep dive. Today, we're wrestling with a subject that, well, it often gets discussed with a lot of emotion and maybe not enough nuance. Atheism.
That's right. And we're diving into Julian Baggini's really concise and, I think, incredibly important book, Atheism. Very short introduction.
Yeah, and this is a deep dive with a pretty specific mission, isn't it?
It is. We aren't here to, you know, debate whether God exists or not. The goal is more to analyze Baggini's argument.
Which is?
That atheism should be understood not as some kind of destructive force, not just about rejection, but actually as a rational, intellectually sound, and genuinely moral worldview, one with its own positive foundation.
Right. So we're trying to move past those simplistic caricatures you always hear.
Exactly. Like the idea that atheism is just blind faith in nothing, or, you know, it automatically leads to nihilism and moral collapse.
Yeah. The genie really forces you, the listener, to look at the philosophy of non-belief differently, as a coherent system for actually building a meaningful life from the ground up.
And that clarity, I think, is what makes this little book so valuable. It's such an insightful primer for basically everyone, whether you're a firm believer, an agnostic, or maybe you're already an atheist.
It gives you the language, the tools to understand the conversation more clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, let's talk about the author. Who is Julian Baggini? Why is he, like, the right guide for this tricky subject?
Well, Julian Baggini, he's a pretty prominent British philosopher, author, journalist, too. He's really spent his career making complex philosophy accessible to people.
Okay.
And he co-founded the Philosopher's Magazine. He's editor-in-chief. So he's deeply committed to that analytical clarity, you know, reasoned argument.
You know, when you look at some contemporary atheist authors, sometimes you find more, let's say, polemicists, people who are really activists trying to tear down religion. What makes Baggini different?
Yeah, that's a good point. He very consciously steps away from that kind of confrontational style. He approaches this strictly as a public philosopher.
So his goal isn't conversion?
No, not at all. It's not to convert you or provoke. It's really just to provide reasoned arguments and the philosophical justification for non-belief.
His tone is super measured, fair-minded. It's educational.
Which is probably why the book feels so credible, right?
Yeah.
He seems to take the concerns, even the arguments, of believers seriously.
Absolutely. And that measured approach, it really feeds into the book's central premise, mm-hmm. which is, when you boil it down, elegantly simple.
In that is.
Basically, the absence of belief in God is the most reasonable conclusion you can draw from the available evidence.
Yeah.
And that a fully meaningful, ethical, purposeful life can absolutely flourish entirely within a naturalistic framework. No supernatural needed.
Okay, so it's an intellectual journey he takes you on. Very much so. He sets it up really well, kind of in three phases. First, there's the definitional phase, getting the philosophical toolkit right, clarifying terms, and crucially, introducing the idea of the burden of proof.
Okay, definitions first, then what?
Then we move into the positive phase. This is where he champions naturalism. The idea that the universe, well, can be completely explained by natural laws. No need for the supernatural.
Got it. And the third phase?
That's the defensive phase, where he tackles those classic challenges people throw at atheists, like, where do you get meaning? How can you have morality without God?
And by answering those, he builds up a case for, what did you call it?
A robust secular humanist ethic.
Yeah.
A positive moral framework.
Right. Let's start at the beginning, then, with those definitions. Because atheist, agnostic, these words get thrown around and misused all the time. Baggini talks about weak atheism versus strong atheism.
Yeah, this is so essential for just intellectual honesty in the discussion. Weak atheism, and Baggini says this describes most atheists, is simply the absence of belief. You just lack a belief in a God.
So you're not necessarily claiming certainty that no gods exist.
Exactly. You're not making that huge positive claim. Strong atheism, on the other hand, is that positive explicit assertion. No gods exist, period.
But doesn't weak atheism maybe sound a bit wishy-washy, like a cop-out? If you're going to reject belief, shouldn't you stand firm?
Well, Baggini would argue that strong atheism is actually incredibly difficult, maybe even impossible to prove. Think about it. You'd need, like, total absolute knowledge of the entire universe, every possible reality, to definitively say no gods exist anywhere.
Okay, fair enough. That's a tall order.
Right. So weak atheism is just the more intellectually modest stance. It's more defensible. It just says, look, I haven't been given enough evidence to make me believe.
And that leads straight into this philosophical idea of the burden of proof.
Yep. If I make an extraordinary claim, the burden is on me to provide the evidence, not on you to disprove it.
Like your example of the talking purple squirrel driving a car.
Exactly. You wouldn't need to spend your life proving me wrong. You just reasonably withhold belief because my claim is extraordinary and I haven't backed it up.
And you see this everywhere, right? Like a crazy headline on social media. I don't have to prove it's false. I just wait for them to provide real sources.
Precisely. So Beghini argues non-belief is the rational default position when there isn't compelling evidence for the claim that a God exists.
Okay. That intellectual rigor then flows into the positive case for atheism, naturalism.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting here is that the rational case isn't just about being skeptical. It's also about proposing a more, let's say, coherent and elegant system for understanding the world.
Which is naturalism.
Right. Naturalism basically says the universe is a closed system. It's fully explained by natural laws, natural processes, the stuff science keeps revealing to us.
And the success of science itself kind of backs this up, doesn't it? From physics explaining the Big Bang to biology explaining evolution. We get pretty far without needing supernatural explanations.
We get incredibly far. And it allows us to use a principle called Occam's razor.
Ah, yes. The idea that the simplest explanation is usually the best one.
Correct. So since we can explain the complexity of life in the universe through natural processes like evolution without needing an external creator, the whole God hypothesis starts to look like an unnecessary extra layer.
It adds complexity where a simpler natural answer works.
Exactly. It feels intellectually unparsimonious is the philosophical term, a bit clunky.
And then, of course, there's the flip side, the sort of negative evidence against theism, famously summed up as the problem of evil.
Yeah, this remains one of the most powerful intuitive challenges for theism.
Yeah.
Beghini points out the apparent logical contradiction.
Between what and what?
Between the existence of immense, pointless, gratuitous suffering in the world, think natural disasters, horrible diseases, random cruelty, and the supposed existence of a creator who is all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-good.
How can both things be true simultaneously?
That's the question. The sheer scale and apparent randomness of suffering make it really hard to square with the idea of a perfect, loving, all-powerful creator. It makes that creator seem highly improbable, at least as traditionally conceived.
Okay, so if the case for atheism rests on naturalism, Occam's razor, the problem of evil, we also have to look at the classic arguments for God's existence and see why Beghini finds them, well, unconvincing.
Right. He systematically goes through a few major ones. First up, the cosmological argument, sometimes called the first cause argument.
That's the one that says everything must have a cause, right? You can't go back forever with causes, so there must be an uncaused first cause, which people label God.
That's the gist.
Yeah.
But the moment you state the rule, everything must have a cause, the obvious question pops up.
What caused God?
Exactly. If the rule is that everything needs a cause, then God should need one too. By saying, oh, well, God is exempt from the rule, you're basically committing a logical fallacy. It's called special pleading.
You're changing the rules just for your desired conclusion.
Precisely. It's like saying all birds can fly, except penguins, because.
Yeah,
well, just because. It doesn't hold up logically.
Okay, that makes sense. What's the other big argument he tackles?
The teleological argument. Also known as the argument from design.
Ah, the look at the complexity of the eye. It must have been designed argument.
That's the classic example, yeah. The claim is that the incredible complexity and apparent design in the universe, like the human eye or the intricate workings of ecosystems, implies there must have been a divine designer behind it all.
But this is where science, specifically Darwin, comes in strong, isn't it?
Absolutely. Evolution by natural selection gives us this incredibly powerful, naturalistic explanation for complexity, for adaptation, for things looking designed, all unfolding over vast amounts of time. No need for an intelligent external designer pulling the strings.
The design is apparent, but the designer isn't actually required by the evidence.
That's Beghini's point. Natural selection does the explanatory work.
Okay, so once those intellectual foundations are set definitions, naturalism, critiques of theistic arguments, we hit perhaps the biggest philosophical and, let's face it, cultural challenge. Morality.
Yeah, the old without God, anything goes fear. Everything is permitted.
How does Beghini counter that?
He brings back a really sharp challenge from ancient Greek philosophy, Plato specifically. It's called the Euthyphro dilemma.
Okay, what's the dilemma?
It asks this very pointed question. Is something good because God commands it? Or does God command it because it is inherently good?
Okay, let me think that through. If it's good just because God commands it.
Then morality seems totally arbitrary, right?
Yep.
If God commanded us to, I don't know, hop on one foot every Tuesday, then hopping on one foot would be morally good. Even if it seems utterly pointless, goodness just becomes blind obedience.
Okay, so morality loses its real force there. What about the other option? If God commands something because it's already good?
Well, then goodness exists independently of God's command. Stealing is wrong before God says don't steal. In that case, God becomes kind of unnecessary for the actual standard of morality. God is just reporting on a moral reality that exists anyway.
Wow. So either way you answer.
Either way, God becomes philosophically redundant for establishing what good actually means. It's a brilliant little dilemma.
So if morality doesn't come from divine command, where does it come from according to Bighini?
He presents secular humanism as the positive moral framework. It grounds morality in things like reason, empathy, our shared human condition, and the common goal of human flourishing, trying to live well and reduce suffering.
And he argues this isn't some radical new invention, right?
Not at all. He points out that our basic moral intuitions, fairness, cooperation, empathy, likely evolved naturally as part of our development as a social species. We survive better by cooperating.
So we're moral because we're social animals who benefit from working together, not just because we're afraid of divine punishment.
That's the idea. The foundations are already human, already part of our nature.
All right, that covers morality. What about the final big challenge? Meaning.
The charge that atheism leads straight to nihilism, where life is pointless.
Yeah, that if there's no God and no afterlife, what's the point?
No.
Question. Bighini argues very strongly against this. He says meaning isn't something you discover out there, like some objective truth written in the stars.
So it's not external.
No. He argues meaning is something we create. It's internal. It's subjective. We forge it through our relationships, our projects, our commitments, the values we choose to live by.
And this actually ties back to something you mentioned earlier, the value of finitude.
Exactly. The very fact that our time is limited, that this life is the only one we definitely know we have, that doesn't diminish life's value. Bighini argues it actually makes it more precious.
Like a deadline making a project more urgent and important.
Perfect analogy. Knowing it ends motivates us to live fully now. It turns mortality from a source of despair into a profound catalyst for action, for cherishing the present.
So where do we find this secular meaning then? Oh, everywhere. In the sheer awe inspired by understanding the natural world through science, in art, in music, in the depth of human love and friendship, in the simple satisfaction of learning and pursuing knowledge. Meaning is all around us, waiting to be created and experienced.
Okay, so stepping back, let's look at the key themes that emerge from all this. What really struck me was how he reframes atheism itself. It's not passive absence, but an active intellectual position. Atheism as the rational default position.
That's definitely a core theme. This principle of intellectual modesty, you know, demand evidence for extraordinary claims. It applies everywhere, not just religion. It really fosters intellectual discipline, which is quite stimulating.
And the second big one has to be the complete separation of morality from religion.
Mm-hmm. His argument, drawing on Euthyphro, is powerful. And as you said, we use secular empathetic reasoning every day when we decide what's fair at work or in our families. We're not usually consulting scripture for that.
It shows our ethical foundations are already largely humanistic, even if we don't label them that way.
Right. And third, I'd say, is the idea of naturalism as a sufficient and elegant worldview. The universe science reveals is just staggeringly complex and wondrous all by itself.
You don't need the supernatural fix to feel awe.
Exactly. Bighini suggests removing that layer allows for maybe a deeper, more authentic sense of awe, grounded in reality.
Which leads to the fourth theme, the human creation of meaning and purpose. This is incredibly empowering, isn't it?
It really is. It puts you, the individual, in the driver's seat. You get to define what success and purpose mean for you on your own authentic terms, rather than waiting for it to be handed down.
That sense of clarity and empowerment really comes through in some of Bighini's phrasings. He has some memorable ways of putting these arguments.
He really does. They stick with you because they cut through a lot of the usual noise. Let's maybe touch on a few key paraphrased ideas.
Good idea. What's the first one?
How about this? Atheism is not a belief in itself, but an absence of belief in God. The burden of proof, therefore, lies not with the atheist to disprove God, but with the theist to provide a reason to believe in one.
Yeah, that just completely reframes the whole debate, doesn't it? It shifts atheism from being constantly on the defensive to being the default stance of rational skepticism.
Precisely. Then there's his take on the Euthyphro challenge. The question is not whether one can be good without God, but whether the very standard of goodness makes any sense if it is merely whatever a deity happens to command.
Oof. That forces you to confront the potential arbitrariness of divine command theory. It really makes you think about what good actually means.
It does. And finally, that beautiful point about mortality. A finite life does not lack meaning. Its finitude is what gives it meaning.
Turning scarcity into value. It's not a bug, it's a feature.
Exactly. It transforms mortality from this dreaded endpoint into a catalyst. The limited time makes us value the present, love more deeply, act more meaningfully. And these aren't just, you know, abstract philosophical points. They offer practical tools for real life.
Absolutely. Let's talk applications. Application number one, enhance critical thinking. That whole burden of proof principle, you can use that every day.
How's
Well, apply it to that sensational political claim you see online, or that viral health trend, or some piece of pseudoscience. Don't just accept it. Ask, where's the evidence? It's a basic tool for intellectual independence.
Good point. Okay, application two.
How about actively constructing a meaningful life? Beghini's work encourages you to stop waiting for meaning to just appear, and instead to actively identify your core values, pursue passions, invest in relationships and projects that bring you purpose.
So it's proactive, like a roadmap for building an authentic life based on what matters to you.
Exactly. And application three.
I'd say improving dialogue and understanding. This book gives you clear, precise language to talk about belief and non-belief. It helps you move past the emotional shouting matches and simplistic labels.
Fostering more respectful, more productive conversations, whether you agree or disagree.
Definitely, which is always a good thing.
So, looking back at our whole deep dive here, what really stood out for you? What was maybe surprising?
You know, for me, it was the power of distinguishing philosophical atheism, the kind Beghini describes, from political dogma, like, say, oppressive state atheism we saw in the 20th century.
That's a crucial distinction.
It really is.
Yeah.
The book successfully argues, I think, that the real danger isn't the simple absence of belief in God. The danger lies in any dogmatic totalitarian ideology, whether it's religious or secular, that demands unquestioning conformity and crushes dissent.
That's a really important takeaway. For me, what stood out was the emphasis on positive atheism. It's framed not primarily by rejection or negation, but by its affirmation of other things.
Like what?
Like affirming human reason, affirming secular ethics based on empathy and flourishing, and affirming a deep appreciation for the natural world revealed by science. It positions atheism not as an endpoint, but as a positive starting point for intellectual curiosity and building a good life.
A foundation, not just a demolition site.
Well put. Okay, so here's a final provocative thought for you, the listener, to mull over based on Beghini's ideas.
Go on.
Beghini argues that meaning is created by humans, not bestowed by some divine source. If that's true, our ultimate values, our purposes, are entirely self-created. Does this radical freedom actually increase, or perhaps decrease, our individual responsibility toward the collective fate of humanity?
Hmm. Does that freedom make us more responsible or less? A powerful question indeed.
Something to think about. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akhatra Foundation.